I'm Laura Vinroot-Poole. For over 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store in Charlotte, North Carolina. On this podcast, we unlock the stories of people's lives through the stories of what they wore. These aren't conversations about fashion. These are conversations about people.
Everybody wants to know her name.
After my conversation with Hamlin, he wanted to turn the tables and ask me questions for once. From boarding school to college and into our adult lives, Hamlin is the keeper and co-conspirator of some of my favorite memories. I had such fun sharing stories with someone who's seen me through some of my best and worst fashion journeys.
So thanks for letting me guest host your podcast, What We Wore. This is a little daunting. But
which part is daunting? Talking to me?
No, that's pretty easy. But the fact that I'm turning the tables on the interviewer becoming the interviewee.
It's daunting to me.
But we've done it before. I've
yes,
interviewed
we have.
Before.
Yes. And we've talked before.
Once or twice. So, Laura.
Yes.
What is your first demonstrable fashion memory? Not, you know, Mama put me in these clothes and there are pictures of me.
Well, no, Mama didn't put me in any clothes, actually, ever. That is probably one of my first fashion memories is I've always been very opinionated about what I wanted to wear, what I wanted to feel like and look like.
Starting at the age of 2, 3?
I think forever. I mean, I do remember wanting to wear tennis shoes with my long dress. I wanted to wear a long dress to Sunday school and tennis shoes with it. And my mom was like, great, whatever. But my first fashion memory probably like really kindergarten is pretty specific to me. I brought my sister to school, my baby sister, to school for show and tell.
Love that.
I had the most beautiful, it was leather lederhosen with a red patch heart across the chest. And it was tan lederhosen.
Were you wearing boys' clothes?
No, it wasn't. It was a skirt.
It was a
lederhosen skirt.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like, okay. I mean, it was, yeah, it was a like an apron dress, but like a mini. Anyway, I was so excited for it and so excited to show off my baby sister at show and tell. But the other thing is that every birthday, my grandmother would take me to buy a dress for my birthday to wear to the party. And we wore long. This is the 70s. You know, I'm born in 72. We wore long dresses.
So every girl wore dresses to birthday
dresses.
Parties. Yes.
And they were called long dresses. And my birthday is on St. Patrick's Day, as you know.
A month
friend.
After mine. Now they can all steal our identity.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah. And well, it's a terrible birthday to have because everybody remembers it because it's not a real holiday. But so you wake up that day and you're like, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day. That's a, you know, like, that's nothing to do today. And then they're like, oh, and also it's Laura's birthday. So everybody wishes me happy birthday, which is lovely. But
Hamlin
I don't remember
Hamlin
anyone's.
O'Kelly thinks it's kind of a, you know, big day.
Exactly. So does Katie O'Brien, my sister.
Right.
But it's a bad one because everybody remembers your birthday, but you don't remember anybody else's. So,
well, you've remembered mine over the years. So thanks for rising
that's
to that challenge.
Called iCal reminder.
So the lederhosen.
Yeah,
that's step one.
Leather lederhosen with a patch heart across the chest.
And do you remember what the shoes were you wore to Sunday school with? What type of tennis shoes?
I think they were like red Keds. I don't know if they were called Keds back then, but they were red tennis shoes.
They were red Keds.
Were they Keds? Yeah. They weren't like pointy like the '80s Keds. They were sort of more rounded toe.
But if they had the blue Keds thing on the back.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
And then if they were, you know, something really cool like tree torns with pom-pom socks.
I was a big tree torn person, yeah.
With the pom-pom socks, of course.
Obviously. I had navy tree torns.
Sure you
do. Do you remember how big the bicentennial was?
The 76. Bicentennial, we were 4 years old, but it was indelible memory.
It was, you know, and I had
It was
so,
all year long.
It was all year long. I had so many red, white, and blue things. And I had red, white, and blue Dr. Scholl's. Like one side was red, one was white. The clasp was blue, something like
were
that.
Were those the across the foot sandals?
Dr. Scholl's. Yeah, Dr. Scholl's.
Yeah,
my faves.
No one. I mean, I tell people about the bicentennial, they don't believe me. You were 4 years old. How do you remember that?
No,
it was huge.
Yeah, it was all the rage. The bicentennial was all the rage.
And then July 4th that year was like mind blowing.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was stuff on television all the time. I mean, all right, let's think about that. Let me ask you a question or two about that. So 1970s style, do you think that still affects you to this day?
I know it does. I mean,
how so?
I mean, every single day. I'm obsessed with clogs. All my babysitters wore clogs. I'm obsessed with old Levi's cords.
I'm still obsessed with those myself.
Love. Mm-hmm. I loved my high school boyfriend's ivory painter's pants. I'm always trying to reconstruct that. I exercise in Grateful Dead tees. I'm obsessed with tie-dye. Obsessed.
Are there any sort of feathery things or shearling things or anything a little flowy looking Stevie Nicks style?
Oh my God, obsessed with that. Yeah, no, that's, yeah. But that's my, like, I think every day it's an opportunity to sort of put on these, all of these parts of your personality together and mix them up and be whoever you want to be.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you're not going to sleep in full Gucci attire or Valentino underwear or full, you know, bejeweled goodness on your ears.
No, but do you know what I do sleep in? I sleep in, there's an old Italian department store in Florence, and I wear men's sleeping shirts from them. I wear that every night, or I wear smocked nightgowns from another Italian store that I love in Florence. I studied in Florence in college, spent a semester there, and fell in love with these places then and still sort of, I don't know. I'm a very nostalgic person, so yeah.
You just said a minute ago that your mother did not dress you, but do you think your mom, the way she dressed and what she wore or your grandmother's wore, how did that influence you?
Very much. I mean, I have a very beautiful mother. She was homecoming queen, and she was a cheerleader. I mean, she was a sort of legendary beauty. And so my whole life played in her clothes. I played in all of her homecoming queen dresses. She had tiaras. I wore those. And this is sort of an everyday after school thing as a little person. I have pictures of me in the backyard running around in strapless, bejeweled homecoming queen dresses.
While you're digging for worms or playing on the swing set.
Literally, yes. Yeah, my brother's blowing up army men in the background.
Right, right. I mean, so you're in the backyard on the whatever y'all had play equipment.
Yeah, but playing with the dogs and the cats.
Playing the dogs and the cats in the strapless evening gown.
Yes.
As one does.
Yeah. And my mom grew up in Fort Lauderdale. So my mom also, I think the colors of all of her gowns are so beautiful. And my mother's
father. All those gowns look like something a Floridian would wear versus
Charlotte? A 1950s Floridian, maybe, yeah. I mean, they're very glamorous. And she has tons of mink tippets.
What's a tippet?
It's a small shawl.
Okay.
With usually has the head and the feet, and you clip on the head to part of the shawl. Honest and truly, and me running around in the back barefoot in these gowns, and not in a uptight way.
Nothing sort of fey about it. It was just sort of like, this is what I'm doing.
It was me digging in the dirt in the gowns. I don't know. Like, I loved.
That's kind of generous of your mother to be like, here's my closet, darling. Go knock yourself out.
No, she's not super into clothes. I think my grandmother was, and my grandfather bought all of her clothes. There's a place called Sophie Curson.
In Fort Lauderdale,
that's also in Philadelphia, and my grandfather chose all of her clothes, and so it's not only that, she's also got these beautiful shantung shift dresses with little crop jackets, and she just had this incredible wardrobe from her youth. I just loved it, and all the colors, all
and then
the
you,
fabrics.
As you grew up, you actually helped dress your mother as a young child with your dad. I mean, I know that story because, you know, 31 years at this point, but lots of people don't know that. Tell the story of what you would do with your father every Christmas time.
Well, yeah. I mean, and there was this legendary store in Charlotte called Montaldo's that was just everything. I mean, it was the most beautiful store. And there was one downtown Charlotte, and it was, you know, a circular staircase and black and white marble floors. And, you know, they had attendants that when you came in would bring you a bottled Coke. And, you know, it was just the most fantastic place. And so every Christmas, as a very little person, Dad thinks it's from the time I was 7, but I think I was like 4. And we would pick out a church suit, which was like a full church suit, like a set. We would pick out a peignoir set, and then we would do either jewelry or a piece of art. So he would either jewelry at the jewelry store, you know, or local up the street jewelry store, or a painting. I've always been an editor. I've always been decisive. There was never any, you know, that the lady would bring Dad five choices of, you know, peignoir sets, and I would say, no, the, you know, the pale green one with the pink embroidery.
Yeah, mom would never wear that.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, like, and it was never like, I don't know, maybe this or this. It was always like, no, it's this and it's this.
And you knew.
And dad would say, dad would just say, wrap it up.
And you, I mean, you, I Laura knew as a young child that this would work for your mom.
Yeah. And I think that that really is funny because I think that's actually really what we do much more than fashion. I'm not super into fashion. I'm really into people. And I think that my job is so much more about helping people find their personalities through clothes. Clothes are really the first place where you're telling the world who you are and what you believe in and where you've been and all of the things. I mean, as shallow as it is, it's the truth. I mean, that is the first way that you communicate to the world. And so I've always thought that that was our job. It's about helping people to make sure that they're showing people what they want to be showing people, you know?
Yeah, I do know because when you and I do what I like to jokingly, euphemistically, not really call our drug deals for my wife.
Right.
You say this all the time. This looks just like her.
Mm-hmm.
Or she would never wear that. Or
yeah.
That wouldn't be right for her. Or maybe.
Right.
You know? And so it's also you... With your mom, you certainly knew your audience.
Yeah.
You knew who you were shopping for or who your dad was shopping for.
And right.
I think that's continued.
Right. I mean, well, I mean, if I may be so bold. If, you know, people say like, oh, it's just, do you just go crazy in the store? Do you just want to wear everything? And I'm like, no, I don't. If this were a store about me wanting to wear everything, it would be old Levi's cords and, you know, navy cashmere sweaters and some tree torns and clogs, I guess.
Maybe some Birkenstocks every once in a while.
Yeah. Oh, 100% some Birkenstocks.
So but, your mom's influence on you, would it be fair to say, was more in the process of becoming what you are now? Or was it her style that influenced you, or a combination?
I think it was my mom's style. My mom, again, very, very beautiful and just so chic. And so I think that I grew up with this really ideal, I mean, my mother is beautiful.
But she's not a flashy person.
No. But in her day, and I think all of the photographs that were a part of my life, all the pictures of her childhood and her young life, I've never seen a more glamorous woman. And so I think that is really my ideal. I want people to be sophisticated and beautiful and the center of attention.
So that brings me to another topic. we're going to kind of go the antithesis of glamour. So you and I met at a little school in Massachusetts.
Right.
It's kind of a boring story, but, you know, we met
in boarding school.
In boarding school. In the late 1980s.
Uh-huh.
And I told somebody recently, they're like, well, what was it like? And I said, I can't explain it. And they're like, well, I mean, what did people look like? I said, well, it was post-punk, post-preppy, pre-grunge.
Right.
You think that's a fair assessment?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, we were a lot of, I mean, so you left Charlotte, you go to Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. How did your style change once you arrived? Or did it change? I still think Andover plays a huge influence on what I put on my back today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, so growing up too, my mother... Oddly, she didn't. I mean, you did. I don't know, two shopping trips a year or something like that at South Park, which is the mall here. But outside of that, she didn't give me. I didn't have extra money, and so I became a big Junior League thrift shop shopper. And so I always say that's where I learned everything that I know about clothes and about fine clothes, because I really, I mean, you could buy Ferragamos there. You bought Valentino cocktail dresses. It was really incredible. The other thing too is when I went to Andover, we looked at all sorts of boarding schools, and that was when I got there, I knew that's where I wanted to be, because
same.
Everybody was in
absolutely
shredded
1,000%
jeans
the same.
And Grateful Dead tees, and just looked so cool, but it looked like themselves and like they weren't trying too hard. And
well, and then what sealed it for me was Betsy, but I cannot remember Betsy's last name, was 2 years ahead of us. She was walking
Wiedemeyer.
Across campus. That's exactly what wearing a cow creamer as a necklace. And I was like, I want to come to school in this place with those types of people.
Yeah. And people seemed really sure about who they were. And like, there was a definite style. But I'm really nostalgic about my whole childhood and my whole life, really. And so I've brought bits of all of the things I love every single day with what I wear, I think.
So, Laura, you sell this little Italian brand called Gucci, but the first Gucci I remember you in was what we called Patagucci, which was the portmanteau of Patagonia clothes and Gucci. I mean, you wore a lot. There was a lot of Patagonia going on. Was there not?
I mean, I still have all of that.
So I mean, gets hot out, I'm in lightweight stand-up shorts all summer long.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I still have mine, too.
Yeah, good.
You cut out the underwear in them, you know?
No, those were not the stand-up shorts. The stand-up shorts were the canvas.
I love the stand-up shorts. The canvas ones with the kind of curvy butt pocket.
Yes.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah, and I still wear them, and they flare way out, and they're not, I mean, it's
those are really, really flattering shorts. Yeah, I think probably most of the things I love are reflections of those times.
The baggies were the ones that were made out of nylon that you cut the underwear out of.
The underwear was so tight.
It doesn't breathe very well if you're a guy. Not to be too personal, but I mean, you know. I mean, so you were, those baggies, though, they weren't for women. I mean, or for girls.
I know, about boy. I was always, I told you.
You've always had guy friends who were close friends still to this day.
I mean,
in addition to your friends who were girls.
No, they were always my best friends, the boys, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
and I would always borrow their clothes.
If I say this, don't get mad at me, but you were a little boy crazy for a while.
Boy crazy, like
there was always a boyfriend.
Oh,
around,
really?
And there was always a guy. Like there was, but I mean, not in a,
there were a lot of guys hanging around. Yeah,
yeah. But not in a bad. I don't mean that in a bad way. Like you were some sort of, you know.
No.
Glenn Close boiling the rabbit or something. But I mean, there was.
Well, I don't know that I was crazy about them. Maybe they were crazy about me.
Sure. But I mean, maybe boy crazy isn't the right term, but you've always been friends with guys.
They were always my best buds.
Yeah.
I mean, boys are a lot easier to be friends with than girls.
There's less drama with us.
Yeah. They don't get mad at you. Or if they do, they tell you and you get over it. And I do think, I have actually always thought it was interesting that I chose a career that is just 100% immersed in women. I mean, it's not only my clients, but all the women I work with and all the vendors. And it's probably 99% female.
How many men do you employ in the Capitol Pool Shop building?
We have a men's store. And
I'm not talking, I said the Capitol Pool Shop building.
We've had a handful. Do not have any now.
Yeah, but over the 20 years that the store, 21 plus years that the store's been in.
A handful.
I mean, you're pretty female-based business, at least at Capitol and Pool Shop.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I never did super well with women as a young person, with girls.
But you've always
did really well with women. Actually, I was always, that was part of the thing is that how I got into this is I always helped my mom's friends. I always helped them kind of fix them and did their makeup and did their jewelry and made their hair current. And I always just, I don't know, they always, you know, my mom's friends would always say, come fix me, you know. I do think that's a lot of what we do here. And also when I started, you know, I started this when I was 25 and my clients were not 25. You know, my clients were 45, 55.
No,
65.
I remember when you started, you left a voicemail on my rickety old answering machine. I was in law school, and it was one of those machines with the tape.
Yeah.
They would go, wah, 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 wah.
My parents still have that, by the way.
Stop. They do not.
Yes.
Well, we still have a landline, so I understand that. But, I mean, you left a message. You probably don't remember, but you left a message, and you're like, hey, call me. I got something to tell you. And I thought, oh, well, okay, this will be great.
The first was like, I eloped, and I'm opening a
business. I knew you had eloped before because you told me that. But I mean, you know, oh, guess what? I just got married. Oh, really? We'll get to that in a minute. But you called and you left a voicemail and you told me you were moving home, which was kind of a shocker.
Yeah.
Because you and I both said when we were in high school, I'm never living in the South again. I'm never going home.
Right.
It's ridiculous. We hate that place. And I mean, you know, now we're both.
We're here. We've never leave.
I would never. I mean, feet first, as they say. But you called and you said, I'm opening a store. And I said, well, I'm sure your parents are going to be thrilled. And you're like, that's not it at all.
They're really not thrilled.
You're like, that's not it at all. I'm like, okay, well, talk to you soon. Bye. Good luck. You know. So,
and did you think that it would really last? Or did you think it was sort of a hobby and like a joke? I mean,
I had no clue. And then my then girlfriend and I, Mary Perrin.
Now wife
of almost 20 years this June. But we were in Charlotte for either a wedding or something. And we came by the original store at Phillips Place, and we walked in, and I introduced you to Mary Perrin, of course, but we walked in, walked around, I was like, oh, she knows what the hell she's doing. You know. And then a year or so later, you dressed Mary Perrin for our rehearsal party.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
And as we've said before, you threw in that tie that I still have.
Matching tie, yeah.
Mary Perrin and I were dating, and this family from Charleston was here buying clothes or something, and Mary Perrin got a call from the mom. Mm. And I didn't know these people, but Mary Perrin got a call from the mom and said, there's this woman who owns a dress store in Charlotte who says she's coming to your wedding, whether she's invited or not. And Mary Beard said, "Oh, is that Laura Benroot Poole? That's one of my husband's good friends from high school and college." Uh-huh.
That's your compliment to me?
Just wait. And the woman, stop. I haven't gotten the compliment. And the woman said, "It's the best store I've ever been in."
Aw.
And
back then it wasn't that great, but yeah.
Well, she.
But it was at the time, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you the lady's name after we get off the phone, so to speak, and you'll be like, "Oh yeah, aww, that makes sense." So yeah, but you told that lady you were coming to our wedding, whether you were invited or not, and you were the only high school, boarding school friend who was invited who actually showed up.
Aww.
So thanks for that.
Well,
20 years later.
I wouldn't miss it.
Yeah. Well,
as I said, yeah. Invited or not.
Invited or not, I'm coming. Well, and then you did dress Mary Perrin for the rehearsal party.
I did.
Yeah. So back to a little bit about some high school influences. So in addition to high school, we both went to a little school in Chapel Hill together.
We went to college together.
And we had almost a weekly standing appointment for lunch at a drugstore called Sutton's.
Yeah.
And we ate there literally, I swear it was there, almost every week.
Right. And we had a charge account that went home.
Yeah, yeah. Except for that. You did have a little bit of a timeout from Chapel Hill.
I had a timeout. I dropped out of school after my freshman year. I had a really hard time folding back into the people I'd grown up with because it was clear that I wasn't who I was supposed to be.
And it was hard for me. I mean, because we had changed. I mean, we were who we were, but it was,
we had just seen so much and done so much. And I think to fold back with your childhood friends and to realize how different you were now after experiencing so many things.
It was hard.
Really hard.
Yeah. Knowing, I mean, you and I think that's another reason why we're friends.
Yeah.
On many levels, because we had that in common as well.
Yeah.
So when you took your time out from Chapel Hill, where'd you go? What'd you do?
I did a Knowles semester, which is a National Outdoor Leadership School.
And more Patagucci, I would
imagine. Yeah, a lot of Patagucci, and I showered 3 times in 3 months. I didn't shave. I mean, I was really way hippied out. And when I got home...
So crunchy.
When I got back, I slept on the floor because the bed was not comfortable because I'd been sleeping on the ground for 3 months. And But it was incredible. And actually, I made my debut. I had my debutante ball and left the day after that to go on this trip. So I was like from the sublime to the ridiculous to the sublime, probably more.
I was about to say just that thing. Let's reverse those words.
Right.
So for those people who don't know, that people in the South still make a debut. They're presented to polite young ladies are presented to polite society.
Yes.
You have a marshal or an escort.
You do a curtsy.
A full curtsy. The Texas dip, as it's jokingly referred to. And you do it before a group of assembled ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Parents have parties.
Well, and in North Carolina, you do the maypole. We do the maypole.
You mean literally like dancing
around
the maypole?
Literally do a maypole. Hold onto a ribbon, walk in a circle around a maypole.
Yeah, that seems unique to
North Carolina.
The old North State.
Yeah.
In South Carolina, people don't walk around maypoles.
I was actually proud to do it. I mean, I'm proud to be from North Carolina. I'm proud to be, you know, my family's daughter. I don't know. There was something really special about it, really.
Right. But then the next day.
Then the next day.
Dawn, full on Patagonia, full on L.L. Bean.
Yep.
Here I come. And where was your Knowles course?
Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and Mexico. So we did all sorts of, it was camping and caving and rock climbing. But we also paddled down the Rio Grande and slept on either Mexico or Texas every other night. It was really amazing. And then I went to an artist colony.
Where was that?
I taught art classes in Charlotte, and then
What designer smocks were you wearing with those children?
I was all super hippied out and actually wearing a lot of the same dresses I wear now, these old, you know, from the 70s, those hippie, you know, printed hippie dresses. And then an artist colony called Penland in the mountains of North Carolina and making pots out of clay.
So what does one wear to when one throws a pot? And it's called throwing pots.
Yeah, probably like shredded old Levi cords and Grateful Dead tees, probably, and hippied out sweaters.
Which you and I wore when we
and Birkenstocks
threw pots in high school.
Yeah,
because the pottery class.
Yeah, Audrey Bensley.
Love Miss Bensley.
Yeah,
throwing pots in that little building. I can't even remember what it's called, but right by the old gym.
Yeah,
love that place.
Yes, I'm still wearing all of that stuff. I'm still. I mean, you may not wear them for events or to work, but I wear them on my off hours.
And I think people would be surprised to know that about you, that you are not, you know, fully decked out in
But I love Gucci. I love Valentino. I mean, yeah. I love and appreciate beautiful clothes, but I wear it all.
Chapel Hill, you were still pretty much the same clothes.
Hippied out?
Well, hippied out. But
yes,
I mean,
I came back to school.
You came back to school and there were lunches.
And again. I became an art major, dropped out of the sorority, and was able to really figure out who I was and be able to admit who I was, I guess, more than anything. Folded back into North Carolina and figured out where my place was from being from here and then going away and coming back and trying to really figure out how, you know, what that meant.
So I will tell another story, anecdote. You and I were having, my favorite story about one of our lunches, we walked in and we sat at the same table all the time. Uh-huh. And we walked in, there were two guys and two girls sitting at our table, and I cannot remember what the waitress's name was, but she went over the table and she goes,
Jesse.
Jesse, yes, Jesse. She was precious. Jesse went up and then she goes, y'all got to move. And they looked at her like, what are you talking about? She goes, oh, this is Ham and Laura's table. Get up. And she made them. Do you remember that? She made them move.
No, I mean, I remember Jesse chasing somebody with scissors. She wanted to kill him.
She, I'm going to kill you is what she said. Because I don't know whether they were trying to rob the place or what. But she said, I'm going to kill you. She loved your brother, Rich, as
she
well.
She loved my brother.
Yeah. So we benefited from Rich's, you know, flowing in his wake at Sutton's drugstore.
But you know, my parents had gone there. My dad played basketball, was a Moorhead Scholar. My mom was a cheerleader. My brother was there. So I think there was all this history that you knew who you were sort of born to be, or that everybody expected you to be, and all that, you knew all the things that entailed, and, you know, who you dated, who you married, where you lived, what kind of job you had.
What you did in the summer.
Yeah.
It's all very expected.
And I didn't feel those things, you know, like I felt really different. And I do think taking the year off, and I made my dad furious, you know, dropping out of school, but
I love your dad, but that's something I would never talk to him about.
and then I eloped. I mean, that made him even more furious. But I think I've always definitely tested boundaries and limits. But I wanted to live here. And I think I really needed to find how I fit in and how I could be myself here and not be the things I was supposed to be, you know, just be who I really was.
Sure. More essay quam videre than anything else. And for those of you who don't know, that's the North Carolina state motto is to be rather than to seem, is what that means.
Yeah, and it's really important to me. I think about it all the time.
You and I wrote a scathing rebuttal to someone that was going to be published in the Daily Tar Heel.
Right.
And it was this person who was attacking the South, and she was a columnist for the Daily Tar Heel, which is University of North Carolina's daily paper. And
right.
UNC, I'm very proud of our alma mater, but it's got a fabulous journalism school. It's known for its turning out great journalists. But this woman just went on this complete diatribe about how stupid we all were and how dumb and slow and backwards, and made us all out to be hayseeds and marrying our first cousins and, you know, just idiots. So you and I sat at Sutton's and wrote a very long rebuttal.
And let's be honest.
I wrote a very long rebuttal, and you edited it.
You edited it and signed my name.
And at the end, you said, add the North Carolina state motto. I said, what is it? And you told me, and I said, well, I'm adding the South Carolina one too, which is kind of like...
What's South Carolina's?
Doom Spyro Sparrow.
Yes.
Which is While I Breathe, I Hope.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. But we didn't publish it. We didn't send it in.
We didn't?
We ripped it up. Because we were like, yeah, I don't want my name in the paper. Because, you know, you're not supposed to have your name in the paper ever. Ever. It's bad. It's bad to have your name in the paper.
Funny. Yeah, I don't know. Is that a Southern thing or also a Swedish thing? You know, Swedes are very funny about boasting or, like, being out there, putting yourself out there.
So my maternal grandmother would say, you never want to be conspicuous, son.
Exactly.
Don't be conspicuous. You know, I mean, seriously. Yeah. Which was another way of saying, don't be common.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and God forbid you be common, you know.
Lord, no.
So... Laura, you just mentioned a minute ago you eloped. When did you elope?
When I was really young.
How old were you?
24.
And where'd you elope to?
Charleston.
I know. Obviously worked because you and the other eloper are still happily married.
Yeah, 21 years.
21 years, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's 11 years older than I was. And that was very controversial. And my dad was running for governor, and that was very controversial. And yeah, it was just sort of crazy and But it was the best. It was really the best thing I've ever done.
Did you wear a traditional wedding dress? Do you go by, do you run by the, you know, jeans bridal and get you a wedding dress?
No, I had, funny, I had had a dress that I bought at the San Francisco Symphony thrift shop. This gorgeous handmade Saks Fifth Avenue from the 60s. And, you know, Saks in the 60s, they brought couture over from Paris and remade it. And that was sort of how you, that was where the first beautiful clothes in the States came from, kind of. And it was this stunningly beautiful halter, beaded with ivy embroidered all down the sides. And I had it, I'd gone to a Grateful Dead concert in San Francisco and bought it then and brought it home. And, you know, my mother said, "What on earth are you going to do with that?" And I said, "I'm getting married in that." And she said, "Over my dead body." Yeah, and I was like, "Watch me." And so it sat in my closet for years and years. And it was perfect.
So y'all eloped to Charleston.
Yeah.
Where was the ceremony?
You don't need to know. It was in Charleston. And what I remember is we walked around. I walked in my gown barefoot all through the city, through the parks. And it was really special. And then, you know, came home and told my parents and made them surprised and upset. My mother thought I was pregnant, you know. So every time she saw me for the next 6 months, you know, all she did was stare at my stomach. But I didn't have a baby. It was an 8-year birth or 8-year pregnancy. It was really one of the wildest things I did and one of the best things I've ever done. Probably.
And obviously it's, you know,
it's working.
Born pretty good fruit these years.
Yes,
later.
I have a 14-year-old that is awesome and I'm crazy for. And yeah. And that's when my dad, he cried every time he saw me for a year after I eloped. But then when I had her,
I'm not mad. I'm just a little disappointed. Just a little hurt.
Not even that. I don't even think he would say that. He just sort of like cried. But we did go to this one crazy wedding, you know, that was 1,000 people or something. And he said to me, "You did the right thing." He said, "This is ridiculous. I know that what you did was, you know, it was just between us." I will never regret it because it was so honest and true. And it was a promise to God between us. I mean, it was like really probably the way it should be. I don't know.
It's funny you say, so at our wedding, which you attended.
Yes.
Before you.
Whether I were invited or not.
Well, you were invited. Once you and Perry found the right church, interestingly, you did go to the wrong church first. But at our wedding, I remember at that moment when you're giving your vows,
yeah,
and it was Mary Perry, me, and Dr. Massey, yeah, and God. And that was it. And everybody else fell away.
Right.
So I would tend to agree with you that having 1,000 people there
and
Mormon Tabernacle Choir,
exactly,
it's a bit much.
Well, and I think, and I had grown up in a family where it probably would have had 800 people. My dad was in the middle of running for governor and probably would have made it even 900 people or 1,000, right, you know, and it just wasn't what I wanted.
Of course, we need to invite the entire General Assembly.
You know, exactly, something like, exactly.
And the General Assembly being the North Carolina State Legislature. But I mean, you know, yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
it's
just not what I wanted. And it has served us well.
Right. Right. I think so. So, Laura, I have a few more questions for you. You moved into the current space you're in 2009, right? Or 10. When was it?
Eight.
Whoops.
Right in the middle of the recession.
Right in the middle of the recession. Well,
we
that was
a million-dollar store, yep, right in the middle of the recession.
Right.
Yes.
And
that was genius.
That was brilliant. Good planning. Good planning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, housing market. So you've been here for 10 years.
Yeah,
and
10 years in the place before.
10 years in the place before that. How's the South influence your decision-making process? Because let me tell you why I'm asking,
yeah,
this. So several years ago, this little newspaper called the New York Times did this little article about you, about when you were picking out things in Europe.
Right.
And you said no one in Charlotte would ever wear that. I've never forgotten that. So they presented something to you, and you said,
right,
no one in Charlotte would ever wear that. How do you think being here and some of your customer base being here, your customer base is all over the world, frankly.
Right.
But I mean, how do you think it affects you and the choices you make?
Again, it's not about me. I mean, it's always been about the client. And so, and this is really, it's not really about fashion. You know, it's about respecting my clients and their lives and finding things to make their lives better.
But you have clients in Los Angeles. Do you pick,
yeah,
out things differently for them than you pick out for the lady who lives 5 blocks away?
I do. I mean, I do and I don't. You know, I think about them both at the same time and think, you know, the lady in Los Angeles is wearing this with this and the person in Charlotte's wearing it with this, at the, you know, she's wearing it to Bible study with heels and a blazer. And the girl in LA is wearing it with Birkenstocks and a long, you know, fuzzy sweater because the climate at that time is this. And here we're wearing that because it's freezing inside air conditioning, but, you know, humid, 90% humidity at the same time. I mean, it's all, you know, I think that's really fun to do. And that's a joy to do. To think of other people and to help them to live their lives better. If this were about fashion and me saying, you know, pink is all the rage, it's, you know, it's all about mini skirts or all, something like that, this would be a nightmare and I would be bad at it.
Wouldn't it be exhausting because you'd have to change every few weeks?
Yeah, you had to. Yeah, exactly. And you'd have to definitely, you'd be really wishy-washy and have to change your, yeah. I, that's not at all what I do. What I do is think about people and try to help them look better, feel more confident. As my mother would always say, hold your shoulders back, stand up straight. It's not at all about trends.
Because they come and go.
Yeah, and I just don't, and it's so funny because my mother every year, or not every year, every time I travel for work and come back from market, and she says, well, tell me all about it. You know, what is it? What are the trends? And I'm like, oh my God, I have no idea. You know, I just don't. And you almost get amnesia. Like, I don't even remember what I saw. But in the moment, I know my clients. I know what their lives are like. I know what events they have coming up. I know their challenges. I know, you know, that's what I'm thinking about the whole time, and how can I help them.
Who's been your biggest influencer as to your personal style?
It really is like this kind
besides of besides your mama and your grandmother.
Yeah, it is. It was absolutely, it's my mother and those photos of my mom and those gorgeous, and actually no, even memories of my mother in this ivory linen full suit that looked like Bianca Jagger, but my mother's blonde and like just so chic. Or a one-shouldered, she had this gorgeous one-shouldered red Halston gown. And yeah, so it's that mixed with Stevie Nicks, mixed with my babysitters, mixed with Jerry Hall and Blondie. And I think for me it is that it's never one person, and it's sort of just this mixture of them all.
And maybe a group of senior girls at Phillips Academy.
For sure.
87, 88.
Absolutely.
Circa. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Just guessing.
Well, I love beautiful things. I love, and I'm influenced by beautiful things everywhere, always.
To the ultimate question.
Yeah.
Hey, Laura, what'd you wear to prom?
Which time?
So our prom, I know. Our prom was held in the delightful Commons Dining Hall.
Right.
It was not exactly like, you know, it was kind of a big deal, but it wasn't like a big deal. I think it's become a much bigger deal since we were there.
Yeah. It was funny because when I look at it, you know, men wore tuxedos, but women did not wear dresses that went with the tuxedos. You were much more casual than the men. But I did dress. My first one, I wore... My family had gone to London for the summer, and there's a big sale at Laura Ashley in August, which is like the biggest deal in the world in the 80s. You know, everybody wanted to go to London in August to hit the sale at Laura Ashley. And I had bought this gorgeous polished cotton Carolina blue, French blue, really, puff sleeve, sweetheart bodice, full skirt with a big bow in the back. And it was so pretty.
That was your one.
That was my Princess Diana, you know, like it was so 80s and
poofy. A lot of poofiness.
So pretty. I'm not humiliated by it. I really love it. And then, but the next year I wore, it was so boring. It was a black sleeveless deep V but to the knee cocktail dress.
I was at that prom. I was invited that year because the rule was only seniors could go.
Right.
Unless you were invited by a senior.
Right.
Yeah.
I had saved up since I was really actually like a little girl, probably since I was 10. There were these Joan and David black pot-a-soie shoes with a big bow across the toe. And I saved up for, I don't know, a year or two for them. And they held them for me at this store up the street from my house and finally paid for them, you know, saved enough to pay for them. They were probably $75. Maybe they were $175. But
it might have been about $175 million.
Yeah, exactly. But Joan and David was everything. I mean, Joan and David in the 80s were so amazing. And luckily, my feet were always a 6.5, I guess. And so they still fit me by the time I was a senior in high school, and I wore those, and they're really pretty. So, yeah, that was the best part of my outfit.
Was that it? You only went to, I thought you went.
I think I can't remember. I don't know if I, maybe, I don't know. Actually, I probably didn't go my junior year because my boyfriend was my age.
That makes sense.
You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, that makes sense since we weren't, you know.
Right.
11th grade.
Yeah. Right. But I did go to, I went to a prom in Charlotte too, came home and went with a friend here.
During spring break or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, probably.
Or did you come home just for the prom?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
It was, and I wore a pretty one for that too. But anyway.
What'd you wear to that prom?
It was like pale pink. I think it was pale pink and black cocktail dress. Those were the days of the beginning of Ann Taylor, and she had really chic cocktail dresses in the 80s, mid-80s.
I remember there were a lot of girls at Andover in black dresses with pearls.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
I think I wore pearls.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
Well, look at you. You've said it all.
You've told us everything.
we're quoting our secret, you know.
We both are really devoted to Howard
Stern.
Obsessed
with Mr. Stern.
Yeah.
If only he were listening.
Oh.
Thanks,
my
Laura.
Dream.
Thanks.
Thank you, Hamlin. What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.